lovers, welcome to Get Real, a podcast hosted by the National Animal Interest Alliance, through which we'll have deeply honest conversations about animal research so we can learn together and make compassionate choices about our medical future together. Welcome to episode 25 of Get Real. I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real, and today we're going to catch up with Trina, who we met in an earlier episode called Can Love Be Immoral? If you listened to that one, you know that Trina lost her beautiful boy Austin to Duchenne muscular dystrophy 2 years ago. But unbelievably, her journey with Duchenne muscular dystrophy isn't over yet, because girls and women are also affected by this horrific disease. It's just that the scientific and medical communities have ignored this fact for decades. Well, Trina's had enough, and she's on a mission to put girls and women with this rare disease on the research calendar. We'll discuss this and more with her today on Get Real. Thanks for joining us today on Get Real, Trina. Our listeners may remember, and hopefully they had a chance to go back and listen to episode 7, Can Love Be Immoral? We met you the very first time. And you were incredibly brave at a very painful time in your life. And you shared the story about your son, Austin, who struggled with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Duchenne is a rare inherited genetic disorder. It's terminal in boys and affects about 1 in 5,000. And we're coming upon a month from what would be the second year anniversary of his passing. So I know this is a really intense time for you. I have spent some time looking at your Facebook posts, getting to know Austin a little bit better because I'd never met him. I wish I had because he was such a beautiful little person and so full of life. And the tributes you've made to him and some of the other friends of yours who knew him made to him were really, really touching. We lost Austin when he was 17 years old. And on what would have been his 18th birthday, you wrote the following. Happy 18th birthday, Austin. Someone once asked me to describe my beautiful boy, and this is what I had to say. He was the best. I was his person and he was mine. Now, don't get me wrong. He could be a moody teenager and could definitely be an Oscar the Grouch at times and hated what this disease took from him, but he was so very brave. The bravest person I ever met in my entire life. He loved adventures. He tried to do as many things as he could possibly do in his short life. And at the end, we let him decide how he wanted things to go. He even made me make a book called Austin's Wishes, and we followed them just how he wanted. He had the most beautiful eyes and eyelashes you ever did see, and a smile that could light up the room. He loved his brother and sister, and he loved me and his dad too. He was an animal lover like me, loved to hunt and fish, and was a collector of stuffed animals from all of his adventures. I had no idea how he fit them all in his bed at night because he insisted that they all sleep with him. He loved his little dog Remy and his service dog too. My life will never be the same, and my heart is so broken. But my life was so much better because he was in it. In honor of our brave boy. And then you invite others to share your favorite Austin memories in your post. There was another post where you said, you know, when the holidays come around, and of course we just had when Easter just passed, that people don't know what to say because this was so intense, so hard. So they just don't say anything. And you beg them basically in this post, hey, look, you know what, don't do that because I want you to talk about him. Because if you don't, it's like my little boy was never real. And so I wonder if maybe you would like to share some of your favorite stories about Austin.
There are so many. He was quite a character. He was just so bright. You could put him on a piece of equipment. At 6 years old, he can operate heavy equipment like my husband. He didn't want to sit down in school and read a book or learn math, but he knew how to operate dozers and excavators. Like, he just had this engineering brain. And it was funny, we would have to take away anything in our house that had batteries or screws because Austin would take it apart and put it back together in a different way, and he would make it better. And I'm like, how do you know how to do that? And he just would. So if you had anything that you needed that had screws or batteries, you had to hide it from him because he was going to take it apart and re-engineer it. We have so many good stories of him on the farm, and he loved fishing. My husband built him a pond, and that was wheelchair accessible, so he can go to the back and fish whenever he wanted. That was just his favorite things to do, and he liked going on road trips. And
I'll tell you one of the stories that I really liked about him that I found through your post. And it just shows what a character he is. And I wish I had met this kid because I would have been crazy in love with him. He was funny. So, you know, at this point, he's full on with his disease, right? And you're traveling all over the place like every 6 months to go here and there for tests and treatments. And he was sitting in his hospital bed and he had a Nerf gun. And he had the door to the room open. And every time the nurse went by, he was shooting them with the Nerf gun, but also filming it on his iPad.
It was all fun and games too, until a grandma went to visit her grandchild in the hospital, and she turned the corner and he thought she was a nurse and he shot her. So he had to take it away, because I'm like, now you can't shoot people's grandmas.
He really was such a cutie pie. And, you know, and again, I'm so sorry. I mean, it's just unbelievable how all of this played out. I know that we discuss this in detail, and you don't have to go through the whole thing again, but maybe just for our listeners who haven't had a chance to catch up, this was a muscle weakening disorder, right? And ultimately, what was the final straw for his body?
So Duchenne affects all your muscles, including your heart and lungs. And that was his biggest issue, was respiratory failure due to complications of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. His lungs just became so weak that they could no longer sustain life.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you this, right? Because I'm sure Austin is here listening to this and probably thinks that the shooting the grandma story is kind of funny, because I do. But what would you like to say to Austin? You know, if he was here right now, what would you like to say to him?
Oh, that we miss him. We just miss him so much. And things are definitely not the same without him. And I would do anything to have him back here with me.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about Duchenne. Like, I know it's a rare genetic disorder, but maybe you can give us a little more of the, you know, sort of the working parts of this disorder so that we can understand it better.
So Duchenne is a type of dystrophinopathy. It's one of the muscular dystrophies that are caused by muscle weakness due to the lack of dystrophin gene. And that affects all the muscles in the body, the arms, the legs, the heart, the lungs, even the brain is affected by Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Right. So dystrophin is a protein that the muscles use to repair themselves. And this is an X-linked disorder, right? So boys have one X chromosome and one Y chromosome, and girls have two X chromosomes, right? And this gene is carried on that X chromosome. So if boys only have one copy of the X, and then they have this mutated gene that causes them to not be able to make dystrophin, then, you know, every time they use their muscles, just like us, right? Every time we use our muscles to do anything, exercise or just walking around, the muscles have to be repaired from having been used. And dystrophin is what allows this repair. Is that right?
Yes. Without the dystrophin, the muscles are not able to repair themselves.
Right. And so these young boys with this rare disease can't repair their muscles. And so that's why ultimately their muscles just sort of give out, because they never get repaired. They just use them and use them and use them until they break down. Like we said, in boys, it's rare, 1 in 5,000. You are a carrier, right? You have two X chromosomes. You are a carrier. But you also apparently have symptoms of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which from what I could find is exceedingly rare, right? I mean, so if it's 1 out of 5,000 boys, it's 1 out of 50 million girls experience symptoms from Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Is that correct?
So for a female to have it as severe as boys, that's how rare it is. But we are finding out it's not rare for carriers to have symptoms, because in a perfect world, only one of your X's would be affected because you still have a backup X. So theoretically, that good X would outweigh the bad X. And that's what we were always taught. You're not going to have problems because you have a backup X. But as we've been finding out over the years, there's this thing called skewed X inactivation, where there's not an even ratio of good X's to bad X's. So you may have 41% good X's and, you know, 59% of the bad X's. So it depends on which ones were activated for that particular gene. So if you have more of your affected X's activated compared to the good X's, you will manifest some symptoms.
And so that 1 in 50 million statistic that I pulled out is really just how many girls would have the severe phenotype that the boys have, like what Austin had. For girls, then, what we have is this sort of Duchenne muscular dystrophy carrier syndrome. Let me ask you about that, because you said something interesting a moment ago. You said, you know, we were always told, because you have a good X, you never have to worry about it, right? And so then throughout your life, you started to develop some kind of symptoms. Was this after you learned about Austin's disease?
It was after we learned about Austin. So when Austin was diagnosed, they did recommend that I would get tested for being a carrier, even though we didn't have any family history, because they said sometimes over the years, the carrier hearts could be affected. So they just wanted you to check your heart to be sure, but they had no idea about the muscles. And then over the years, as we've learned more, we met other females like us. We found out that there's a lot of us that are affected.
What are the symptoms for female carriers?
It's a whole range of symptoms, just like with the boys. Some carriers don't have any symptoms at all, and some have severe muscle weakness, fatigue, heart problems, respiratory problems. It ranges. Most of the time, you can't really run. You can't be physically active. They do recommend that you exercise, but there's a line that nobody understands. Like, nobody fully knows, like, how much exercise is too much. Should you be exercising every day to try to keep yourself as strong as possible? Or if you exercise too much, you lost what muscles you had and you can't get them back. So there's a fine line of exercise, and there's still a lot of research to find out, like, what's the magic number.
Tell me about that whole thing. You know, you went to the doctors because you had some symptoms. Tell us about those initial symptoms and what your experience was.
They just brushed it off, as many doctors do. You're a full-time caregiver. Your son requires so much of you. You're just tired, or you're just not getting enough sleep. You're stressed out. But, you know, these symptoms aren't really there. It could be all in your head just because you're so tired, and just different things along those lines.
Well, that sounds very frustrating. And you had already been diagnosed as a carrier, right?
Yes.
So they knew that at least some of your cells had the faulty gene for dystrophin.
Correct.
And they still just told you it was in your head.
Right.
And how did that feel?
Awful, because you're going through this stuff and you don't want to be sick. You don't have time to be sick, but you're just trying to figure out what's going on so that you can fix it and go back to your everyday life. Go back to being a caregiver for your son. Go back to doing all the things that he needs you to do.
What were your symptoms?
I had severe muscle weakness and I was just tired all the time. And I couldn't really walk long distances. I was trying to run and I just couldn't do it. And I found out that when I was exercising, I had to take long breaks. Like, if I exercise 5 days this week, next week, I probably couldn't exercise at all because my muscles just wouldn't work.
Wow. And so was it just muscle weakness, or did your symptoms sort of progress to other parts of your body?
They have progressed over the years, but it was a really slow progression. So for the first couple of years, it was just the muscle weakness and fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Did you end up with breathing issues or cardiac issues?
Yes. So there's a few studies for women affected by Duchenne. There are very few right now, but there was a cardiac study at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and I participated in that, and I found out that my heart was affected. I was in my 30s, and I had fibrosis. So I've been on cardiac medicine for probably almost 10 years. And then I ended up being diagnosed with cancer, and through that, I found there was something wrong with my lungs. So this year, I started seeing a pulmonologist because I have right-sided lung paralysis, and it's caused by neuromuscular weakness. So
the doctors believe you now?
Yes, they believe me now.
Yeah, so this is kind of unbelievable, right? And I am sorry you're dealing with all this. I mean, but you are so amazing. I mean, you're a farmer. Before we even talked this morning, it's, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, and you'd already done your first check, and you have a huge number of animals over there that you clearly love very much. And I've seen your posts where you're out there with them all the time. So your muscular strength is very important to you, obviously, because your heart seems to be in farming for sure. How long ago did they start really becoming serious about this and considering this to be a real disease that needed treatment and investment of time?
The last 3 or 4 years, there's been a change, and they're starting to pay attention and believe the females when they say that they're having some of these same symptoms.
Are the treatments the same for the boys as they are for these carrier girls?
No. So there's not many treatment options for boys to start out with. There's lots in the pipeline, but there's not really any treatments that are set in stone because the dystrophin gene is so wide. Some boys have mutations, some have deletions. So there's not a one size fits all. Like, a lot of the recommendations are steroids. They have exon skipping drugs, drugs that help with fibrosis throughout the whole entire body. But there's none for girls because none of these medications have been tried in girls. None of the research studies or the clinical trials. They have not been tested in girls. So we cannot take these medications because girls have a different reproductive system and we have different issues that they don't know how these drugs would affect them. So until we get added to the clinical trials for safety and efficacy, we don't know how these drugs will work. So we cannot take them.
So you have no treatments for your symptoms, basically?
Ibuprofen and CoQ10 is what's recommended right now.
My word. All right. Let's talk about your daughter, Aubrey. So you have a beautiful daughter, and she is, what, 17-ish now?
She's 15.
She's 15. Okay. You learned something a bit tragic about Aubrey as well in the course of all of this stuff you were going through. Take us through Aubrey's story.
Once Austin was diagnosed, we had already had all our children. We have 3 children. we knew we had Aubrey, but the doctors don't recommend getting girls tested until they're over the age of 18. But when Aubrey was in kindergarten, we started noticing some of the same signs that Austin had. She was tired all the time. She complained her legs didn't work. She was having trouble going up and down steps. And I'm like, there's no way that this is happening again. So we took her to the pediatrician and I just asked them to check her CK levels. Because a lot of times if you're going through problems with your muscles, your CK levels will be elevated. So once they came back elevated, then her pediatrician recommended we go to the MDA clinic and we have the genetic testing done. So it took about 6 months for the genetic test to come back and it came back showing that she was a carrier.
Mm. And so what has her progression looked like?
Her progression is different than mine, but she has been progressing more quickly and she's having heart issues at an earlier age. In fact, she just had a surgery in December and we had to implant a cardiac monitor.
Why? What was happening?
She kept having episodes of ventricular tachycardia. So her heart rate goes up for no reason. She can be sleeping and her heart rate's going to shoot up to almost 200. And then it keeps going into an abnormal rhythm. So they wanted her to have a device so that we can know. Because there's two different types of tachycardia. Some is benign and some are getting into the dangerous territory. And hers started out benign, but started moving up into the dangerous territory. So the device is going to tell us like what percent is good and what percent is bad. And if she keeps going into the bad territory, she's going to need to have more procedures.
Like maybe a defibrillator to keep her heart rate regular.
Yes.
And they believe now that this is all related to her being a carrier of Duchenne.
Yes. And she had her first cardiac MRI at the age of 13 and she already had fibrosis.
Oh my goodness. The physical manifestations of this disorder are clear and tragic and very heartbreaking. But I saw something about socio-emotional and cognitive disorders associated with the disease with girls as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So your brain also produces dystrophin. So when you have a lack of dystrophin, it could affect the way you learn and you could be ADHD. You could have trouble with focusing, like reading and math seems to be the biggest issue. Now these kids are brilliant, so they understand. It's just they have to do it in a different way. So if a teacher doesn't fully understand that Duchenne can affect the brain, they're labeled as a problem child, a kid who doesn't want to sit and listen or who doesn't want to learn. And that's not the case at all. Things just have to be done a little bit differently for them to be able to reach their full potential.
How would they know this? I mean, so are you must be very vocal with the teachers at Aubrey School and you've let them know. And have they received that? I mean, have they accepted that? What's been their response?
It's been a slow process, but they've come to understand that this is really something that's going on. And we have foundations like the JET Foundation and Parent Project that they have papers, like they've published papers stating that this is the effect of Duchenne on the brain. And they broke it down in resources for teachers to be able to have on hand. So that's helped. That's made a big difference.
Tell me what you said to the doctor when she was having these issues, feeling her heart rate increase. How did you present that to the doctor?
We just kept showing up and I'm like, you cannot tell me this is normal. This child is having problems. She keeps telling me her heart rate is not right. It's making her extremely dizzy and she's even more tired than normal. There's something not right. Like we need to figure this out. And she has learned to be very vocal for herself. So she knows, she has learned over the years what is her normal and what is not.
I know you have all these things going on with your own physical health. And then, of course, the whole thing with Austin, and you've got two other children, and you have this farm, and you have a husband. And I know you've got so much going on, but at the same time, I just find you so inspiring because you're so strong. You never give up. You have no problem getting in everybody's face to say, hey, wait a minute, hey, wait a minute, hey, wait a minute. This is what's going on here, and I need you to take it seriously, and I need you to do what you can to help make it better, right? So there's another post that you put in Facebook that I really, really love, and we're hearing it right now. You are a natural advocate for yourself, for your children, and now for women with this disease. Without people like you, I'm not sure this will continue to move forward. Look at how people are still struggling to get treatments and research for the boys. That's a rare disease, 1 in 5,000. Now you're talking about this female carrier syndrome that people know even less about, and who's going to push for that? So I want to read the first paragraph of that post, and then I would love for you to tell us, you know, what set you off? What got you really going? Tell us about your advocacy journey, because I'm incredibly impressed with it. All right, well, here's the first paragraph. It's called The Making of an Advocate, and you wrote it at the beginning of this year. Growing up, I never imagined I would become a patient advocate. I had no idea what it meant or what it even entailed. Fast forward a few years to when my middle son was diagnosed with a rare terminal illness as a small child, and our world suddenly got turned upside down. Seemingly overnight, I became a patient advocate without even knowing it. It started out very slowly, with me just kind of doing research on this specific disease, and then it turned into my life's mission. I was going to save my son and other children just like him. Little did I know how much this advocacy would grow and evolve throughout the years. Tell us about that.
So growing up, I was not an outgoing person. I was very shy and quiet and reserved. And I figured that's just what kind of person I would be. But then Austin got sick. And the day we got the diagnosis, the doctor told us there was nothing that could be done just to take him home and love him. And that did it. Because I'm like, this little boy is only 6 years old. How can you tell me as a parent to just go home and love him? Obviously, we love him and we will continue to love him. But that's not all we can do. Like, we weren't just going to sit back and do nothing and just let the disease take its course without ever trying to fight back. So that's what lit the fire. And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not just going to sit back and not do anything.
And so what did you do?
I would stay up so many nights just researching everything I could about Duchenne muscular dystrophy, trying to find treatment options and cures and then a hospital that could treat them. And at first, I found nothing. There was no local hospital that really had any experience with boys with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. There were no treatment options when he was diagnosed, and we were so far away from a cure. So that's how it started. And then I found out about organizations, and then I found out about hospitals that would treat him. And then after we go to these hospitals, we found out about clinical trial options and treatment options that were in the pipeline to be able to help him. And it just went from there.
So you found organizations. Tell us about these organizations.
The first organization we found out about was the MDA. So they were kind of local to us, and they provided clinics every so often. So we would go to that, and they had this program every year for summer camp, where for a whole week of the year, the kids, you know, they didn't have a disease or they didn't have a disorder. They didn't have disabilities. Like, this camp went out of their way to make these kids feel like they were the most important people in the world. So Austin started going to camp when he was 6 years old, and it was the best week of the year. And then we just became more involved with the MDA with some of their fundraisers and their different functions. And then it grew on a national level. We got involved with Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy. I started going to conferences. They put on some really amazing conferences, and you have all these industry leaders and pharmaceutical companies, and they're telling you about what they have to treat kids with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And then from there, it just kind of evolved into more organizations. And we just became more involved. I became more involved, and I was discovering my voice.
Mm-hmm. So this shy introvert all of a sudden now is a big, powerful voice because you have a child you're trying to get people to pay attention to, right? And now you have another child in the same position. One of your posts recently was about the Patient Engagement Collaborative. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I was notified that the new thing called the Patient Engagement Collaborative with the FDA and the CTTI, which is the Clinical Trial Transformation Initiative, they started this thing called the Patient Engagement Collaborative. They wanted to hear the patient voice. They wanted to have involvement to see what can be done to make the patient experience better when you're dealing with rare disease. So I was notified of this program and that they were accepting applications. I don't know what possessed me, but I'm like, I think I'm going to try to do this. It probably won't turn into anything, but I'm going to apply anyway. So they stopped the application process once they reached 75 qualified applicants. From there, they interviewed 16 people. So when I got the email telling me I was one of the 16 people interviewed, I'm like, oh my God, like, am I actually doing this? I can't believe they chose me. And then my interview went well, and I was one of 8 people chosen for a 2-year term for the Patient Engagement Collaborative through the FDA.
So what does that give you the opportunity to do with the FDA now?
It gives me the opportunity to listen to things that they may have in the works and provide input like, hey, this is a really good idea, or this is a really bad idea, or, you know, what language should be used. Like, we just have a say. Like, we don't have the ultimate say, but we just have input. So just to have that opportunity to have your voice be heard and they're willing to listen to what you have to say to make this better is a really big deal.
Have you spoken to them about this female carrier syndrome?
We did not get that far yet. And the really neat thing about the PEC is that there's patient representatives from all kinds of disorders. So it's like a collective voice about how to make rare disorders better on a whole. So you really don't sit there and talk about your specific disorder. It's as a group, as a whole.
They want your opinion to determine whether or not they're going in the right direction?
Yes.
And you folks tell them, based on your direct experiences with the patients that you're all connected to?
Yeah, like patient-focused care is where it needs to be. You know, it used to just be like clinician-focused, and the patients really didn't have a voice. Well, the new direction is going patient-focused, with the patient having a larger voice in their care or treatment options. And that seems to work better with people in rare disease because you're the professional. You live with this every day. So you know more about it than someone who maybe read a chapter in it 10 years ago in a textbook.
Fascinating. And of course, the outcome of this will be that the medical profession will also get this information. So this is an amazing opportunity, and I'm super, super proud of you. How does it feel to be a part of this process where you may actually shape the future of treatments for children with rare diseases?
I can't believe me, this one little person, has been able to do all this stuff. It's still mind-blowing.
Very empowering. Yeah. You're not just involved with this group. Over the course of the several years, you've been involved in different groups, right?
Yes. Board of Directors for Families Helping Families, which is a local organization in our community for families with special needs. I'm an ambassador for the JET Foundation, which is a Duchenne-specific organization. And I participate in a lot of webinars and podcasts and all the conferences through Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about what those groups do.
So like the JET Foundation provides community resources and workshops, and they invite organizations like different pharmaceutical companies or different clinical trial organizations to come in and talk about their treatment options. And they provide a Camp Promise. So they help cover camp for kids with Duchenne muscular dystrophy that want to participate in camp. They do different grassroots efforts. I know organizations like Parent Project, they help fund research. They help fund a research study at the University of Florida in Gainesville for carriers. And they wanted to check all the muscles. So that's how I found out like most of my muscles were affected. They're helping fund the research that's necessary for different treatment options.
Now, what can you tell us about the nature of the research? Is this animal-based research? Is it just patient research? Is it a combination of things?
So what I've found over the years is that it starts small with the zebrafish, and then they move on to the mouse, and then also using dogs as well.
Well, dogs carry the gene. They get muscular dystrophy, right? And so that's an interesting thing just for our listeners. I think sometimes this gets missed by people. When you're studying a question like this, you don't just pick any living system. There's always a real rationale for why, for example, you would work with zebrafish or mice and then dogs. You're looking at different levels of disease. We have analogous genes with many species, right? There's all this biological conservation. When you get to an animal like a dog, you know, now you can actually measure in a very controlled way, you know, muscle function along with some of these things and study these genes very specifically than in animals. I mean, we know that the gene therapies that are in the pipeline now to treat boys have come in large part from the research that's been done with dogs. And we talked in the last episode about groups who oppose that, even though this is how we're learning about Duchenne muscular dystrophy and maybe how to treat it and hopefully cure it one day. How do you feel about that?
So I'm an animal lover. From a certain perspective, I can understand how they would just automatically assume that, you know, we shouldn't be doing this and it's cruel and it's horrible. But like you said, it's been in control environments and it's absolutely necessary. Without these animals and the research, so many more kids with Duchenne would be dying. There would be no treatment options in the pipeline at all and basically no hope. Like we know with all these different research studies going on, we know what could be coming up and you have hope. And if you take all that away, then there's no hope and you're dealing with this terminal illness and you have nothing to look forward to because you know what the end result is going to be. So I don't think these people should go around shutting down these studies without fully understanding the effect that it has on the boys with Duchenne and their family.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. You know, and the other thing is, if you think about it, there aren't a lot of cures for many things, right? We prevent diseases from happening or we treat the symptoms. You know, HIV used to be a death sentence and now people take a cocktail and they live very healthy lives. Same with diabetes, right? I mean, we've treated these things. And even with the Duchenne muscular dystrophy boys, there may not be a cure, but they're living longer and their quality of life has been improved because through research, it was determined that there were certain drugs that would alleviate some of their symptoms and, you know, maybe give them more time with their families, right? My hope now is that the same kind of thing will start happening for the females. How long have there been carriers with Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
I would say there's probably been female carriers with Duchenne muscular dystrophy as long as there's been a boy with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Like, it's just, it's been brushed off or undiagnosed for so long that people maybe way back when, 40 or 50 years ago, when they were still learning about the beginning of Duchenne in boys, they had no idea that it could be this way in women.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your advocacy then, who else are you talking to get this issue out in front? Because someone's got to provide the money for this research you're talking about, right?
So I've been speaking with a bunch of advocacy leaders in the Duchenne community and going to the Duchenne Centers of Excellence that normally treat the boys and been having conversations with them. And then now pharmaceutical companies, been having these conversations with pharmaceutical companies, say, hey, are you interested in how it can affect females? Can you add them to your studies? And there's nothing set in stone right now, but the conversation is there. And I think the focus may be leaning towards having small trials with affected girls in the future so that we can have options to the same treatments or cures. And like you said, there's probably never going to be a specific cure. It's going to be a cocktail of different treatment options that are going to slow the progression. And there's already been progress. Duchenne used to only be known as a pediatric disorder. And now clinics are having to transition boys into adult care, and they're having to find adult specialists because they're living longer.
Mm-hmm. What's your specific goal in all of this?
Just for women to be heard, like this is actually going on and they're really suffering and they need to be heard and they need to be taken seriously.
When you speak, the passion you feel for this comes from everywhere, comes from your eyes, your body language. This means a lot to you. Why are you an advocate and why is being an advocate so important to you?
Because of my kids. And I don't want any other family to experience the heartbreak that we had to go through by losing Austin. So I'm trying to do this to keep other families from having to go through the same heartache. And my kids were very, very important to me, and their stories deserve to be told, and they deserve to have treatment options. I've been told over the years that I share too much, that it's personal, and you shouldn't share business like that on Facebook. And I'm like, but if you don't share it, no one will know about it. And if no one knows about it, no one can do anything about it. So I'm very transparent, and I don't have anything to hide. And if you don't like the stories, then you can just go somewhere else. But it's important to get everybody's stories out there, because this is something that's really going on. People are going through this, and hiding it under the rug helps no one. It's doing a huge disservice to the entire community and people affected by Duchenne muscular dystrophy. They're not less than, you know, they're just like everybody else, and they deserve to have this care.
Yeah, absolutely. You always talk about how brave Austin is. And I just want to take a minute to tell you how brave you are. You really are inspiring, empowering. You don't want anyone to go through this. These are people you don't even know, right? You're just so centered in love, right? You see the world through a filter of love, and you somehow find the strength, despite your own setbacks, to continue on this mission. And I just think it's really powerful and so loving, and I appreciate it so very much. Before we close, I wonder if you have any final thoughts that you want to put out there for our listeners about anything, anything that's on your mind, anything that's in your heart.
Be kind, be supportive. Like, you don't know what these families go through on a daily basis. Sure, there may be people like our family who share a lot on Facebook or other platforms, but you don't know the full story, you know, the picture of their everyday, like 24/7, everything that goes into taking care of someone with a disability or a disease like this. So just be kind, show them some support, and just be there. Like, we've lost a lot of family and friends over the years as things progressed because they just couldn't handle it or just didn't want to see through the ugly. They didn't want to see the beautiful aspects of, you know, raising a child with rare disease. So they just left, and you feel abandoned, and it takes a toll on your family and in your kids. They don't want to be abandoned. They want to have as much love and support as possible. So I just say, be kind. Everybody's fighting a battle you may not know about, whether it's a disease like Duchenne muscular dystrophy or any other thing that they can be going through. Just show kindness.
Trina, thank you again for coming back on Get Real and being so open and so honest and so loving. And I appreciate you very much. I will be sending healing energy and thoughts and prayers to you and Aubrey as you continue through your journey. And anytime you want to hop back on and fill us in on some of the updates and new opportunities for us to help people with rare diseases, please let me know. Just thank you again so very much for being you.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate it. I appreciate you seeing what's going on and wanting to make it a better place and helping our efforts.
It's clear from our discussion today that more research is needed to help us understand the etiology of this disease and how to treat it. And the fact of the matter is that research with animals will be necessary for us to learn most of what we need to know. Plain and simple. You know, I'm getting pretty tired of hearing animal rights groups and their supporters insist that we don't need animals to understand diseases like this without also telling us specifically how we can do that. PETA and others, please tell us specifically how we will use an organ on a chip, for example, to understand the genetic and molecular underpinnings of a disease that progresses over time in a whole person comprised of several organ systems that interact with each other in the environment. Design that study and share it with us, or stop this nonsense and admit that you're deliberately misinforming the masses to suit your personal agenda. The truth is that research with animals is a consumer-driven product. We want treatments for ourselves and our loved ones when we're sick, but we don't want to accept what animals have to go through for us to have them. So a lot of people are eager to believe this fiction handed to them by animal rights groups. It makes them feel better about themselves, but it's pure fantasy, and it prevents all of us from coming together to brainstorm about real solutions that will reduce the need for animals moving forward. Now I ask you, is that ethical behavior? I'm Dr. Cindy Buckmaster, your host for Get Real. Thanks for joining us today, and remember, I need your support to keep Get Real rolling. Please click on the support link of our website at getrealpodcast.info and commit to a small monthly donation. We still have a lot to discuss, and I appreciate your engagement. Up next, are research animals harboring infections we don't know about? Find out on the next episode of Get Real. We'll talk soon.